Hi, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of A Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. Today, I'm deciding to wear, once again, I have a beautiful headdress on. I have a long flowing button-up shirt as a gown, actually, that touches the floor with ruffles on the end. It looks really pretty. I think everybody would enjoy it. So I promised everybody on my Facebook that I would be talking about some really difficult subjects today, about sexual assault and talking about cancel culture as well. It's going to be some difficult subjects that come in later in the episode, so I wanted to start off a little bit lighter. You know, the thing about taking care of each other in our community is that when it comes to community, it's also weird that sometimes the community that you rely on can also be the community that hurts you. When you feel like you finally found your place in community, but then something happens and it changes everything. Like, how you feel about your community can also make it to where you have fun or feel safe in your community. These ideas that I've been having recently and what's been swirling around in my head is that when you make your own community, and then when you make your own community, and then that also tends to, if that hurts you in the end, it gives you more devastation, I've recognized. You know, we have chosen family in the queer community too, about the people that we choose to be close to us, and sometimes those relationships don't last, and they can leave you with a feeling, a broken feeling, I guess, for lack of a better term. So, you know, take care of each other out there, everybody. It really matters to have your safety net and to have the things to keep you where you need to be. So with that, let me ask everybody in the comments, how are you doing, listeners? Tune in, fabulous listeners. We've got a sizzling announcement for all you drag aficionados and karaoke connoisseurs. Join us every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. for an unforgettable night of glamour and entertainment at Misfits Bar and Lounge, located at 2530 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. Hosted by the mesmerizing Autumn Rains and captivating Coco Gem Holiday, this drag queen karaoke show will have you singing, dancing, and living your best life. Let loose and showcase your vocal prowess alongside these extraordinary queens as they create an atmosphere bursting with energy, laughter, and pure fabulousness. Mark your calendars and gather your squad for a Wednesday night that promises to be nothing short of spectacular. Whether you're a seasoned performer or a first-time diva, Misfits Bar and Lounge is a place to be for an unforgettable evening of entertainment, empowerment, and endless fun. Don't miss out on the fabulous extravaganza. Join us this Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and let your inner star shine at Misfits Bar and Lounge, Portland's newest queer plus space.
It's a podcast. Check it out. Tune into what they tell you podcast. Check it
out. And we are back, listeners, and bringing on to my podcast, I have the one and only Carly J. Phoenix. Say hi, Carly.
Hi.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to have you. Me and Carly go way back. We are sweetheart sisters. She is the first mixed sweetheart of Portland, which is super cool. And I think that's just such a great and amazing title to have. She also served on my board, and I think she's a great human being. She's also a community activist, and she has a lot of great opinions on difficult subjects, and she knows how to be mindful about when we're talking about them, which is really great. So this is a really great opportunity for us to learn a little bit more about Carly and talk about some stuff that's happening in our community, which is really great. But first, let's start with the easy stuff. And so, Carly, I normally ask my guests, how long have you been doing drag, and what made you want to get into drag?
Ooh, good question. So I feel like I've been slapping Maybelline Matte Mousse Foundation on my face for about 10 years, but I feel like I've been doing drag for, like, drag, I think, since 2015, I think, was the first time I performed. And then, of course, I've been doing good drag for about 3 months, so that's pretty exciting. And I think for me, what got me into drag was, like, just wanting to have fun and build community, and like everything I do, it was really just a sense of like trying to be part of a community and build that up. And it's really fun. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know. I love that. I love that fully. I think that, drag has always just been a really beautiful outlet for me to like express myself and like kind of know what's going on in my world and stuff like that. So I've always liked drag for that reason too. Yeah. So how long have you been performing in Portland? Or is this the only place you've performed?
Wow. she's not as world traveled as you are. No, I've performed other places, primarily around the Pacific Northwest, but I grew up in Portland. Okay. I've lived here my whole life. So, primarily just performing in Portland. I started, I think the first time I ever stepped on a stage was at the Embers on like a Monday. And it was like back in September of 2015.
Oh, didn't you have like the arrow brows, you know, that we all used to kind of do that was kind of in for a second? Like where it was like an open bracket? Wasn't that you?
Okay, I didn't know this podcast was going to be bullying behavior, but I did. What's funny because when I first started drag, I actually used my natural eyebrows because I didn't know how to glue them down. And then I was like, I'm going to shave my brows off because that's a thing that people do when they're having midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. It was either dye my hair blonde or shave my eyebrows off, and I don't have hair under this beanie. So I was like, eyebrows it is. And so I actually was like really good at drawing brows on when I first started. Mm-hmm. And then quickly, went to the weird arrow brows where they don't really get filled in. Mm-hmm. And I look back at pictures of myself and I'm like, ugh, who let me leave the house like this? I'm a monster. I mean, I'm still a monster, but at least my brows look decent now.
Still a monster, but my brows look decent. Oh, gosh. No, I used to do the open bracket brows for a little bit there. I actually thought they were super cool. And I think a lot of us did it for a second. And then we were all like, why are we doing this? Why are we leaving the house? We cannot pull trade with bracket brows.
Yeah, they're not very Womana brows for sure.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's so fantastic. And just a little bit about Carly's history. Since I've known Carly, like, I've seen her host shows, and she's a great comedic performer. She does serious stuff really well as well. And I've seen her actually buck and twirl a little bit, and it's been great. Like, everything she does to the stage is just super fantastic. She's a cast member of one of my brunches. But the reason I brought Carly on today is because we're going to be talking, so trigger warning, we are going to be talking about difficult subjects in this podcast today. The trigger warning is around sexual assault, abuse, intimate partner violence, domestic violence as well. And then also now, cancel culture is kind of becoming a trigger warning for people. So we're going to be talking about cancel culture as well. So if you don't want to hear any of those things, we'll see you next week. But if you want to stay on board, I also have some juicy drama. Oh, no, now you guys are going to stay. So let's get into it. So this community, I had posted on Facebook at the time of recording this podcast about how I was going to record this podcast about what was happening in the community. And I want to actually go back before the incidents that we're going to be talking about. And I want to talk about how the first week I had moved to Portland, I had become friends with a drag artist in this community that said, if I ever performed at a specific show because like SA allegations, and I'll actually on the podcast, I can say sexual assault because this isn't TikTok, sexual assault allegations, that they would never be friends with me again. And that was my first exposure to these kind of incidents in Portland. So this was roughly probably in July of like 2019. If you ever perform at that show with this person, I'm going to never be friends with you again. And I was like, oh my God. And I was so terrified because that stuff kind of doesn't really happen in other places at that level. And I didn't know what to do. And me and my roommate at the time, Donatella My Secrets, we like kind of had a long conversation about it. We're like, well, what are we supposed to do? Like, if we perform in the show, does it mean we don't care about this person's feelings, or we think that their allegations are not important, or does that person not matter to us? Or if we decide to stay out of the show, does that mean that we think this person is an abuser or a rapist? Or does that mean that we can't go back to that bar anymore? Like, are we supporting the bar, or are we trying to cancel a queer space? Or like, what does it mean that we're doing? Are we doing our part? Like, where's the court document? And I remember thinking about all of these things. at the time. And Carly, you've lived here a lot longer. How have you somewhat, like from a high level before we get to specifics, how have you kind of navigated those kind of situations?
Well, I mean, I'll start by making a joke, sort of. I avoid confrontation like the fucking plague. Sorry if
we can curse.
But I also, it is a really tricky thing to navigate, especially in the city, because I think, unlike other places, we, good and bad, I think we focus a lot on, like, who a person is versus, like, the show. And I think that's always a little difficult because when we're talking about cancel culture, I think I always struggle with cancel culture because I'm like, do I think that we should, like, be canceling people who deserve it? Yes. But do... what does deserving it, quote unquote, look like?
That's a good question.
I also think that, so my background has professionally has been, there was a decent amount of time where I worked in an industry and specifically, so I have a background in nonprofits, Coco, you know that. I worked for an organization and actually co-ran an organization where I got a lot of pushback about working with people. So I used to run an organization that worked with queer people who are incarcerated. And we talked a lot about, you know, what does forgiveness look like? And, you know, I got a lot of flack for working there because it's like, how do you deal with these types of crimes? And I'm like, well, one, I don't get paid to have the answers to that. But two, like, you know, bigger picture, what does community look like and how do we build community and how do we take into account people's pasts and the things and how do we, you know, the thing I struggle with a lot is what does forgiveness look like? Right. And
well, and actually, I have a point on that, actually. You know, because that, I know that's probably where this whole entire conversation we're going to have today is probably going to end up, is what does forgiveness look like, right? And, but there is a, like, beginning point to this that I want to really bring up, is I say, I do think it's up to victims or survivors or whatever term you feel most comfortable with, to decide what justice looks like, and to decide what that forgiveness looks like for them. I don't think that other people should necessarily participate in that discussion of what somebody else's forgiveness should look like. But there are a lot of scenarios where the victim or survivor wants to be, they want to wash their hands of it. Like, they might not even be in the same circles, or at least in this case, what we're talking about, even in the same scene. They might not be in the same state, city, country, continent. Like, they might be so far removed that it's more triggering for them for people to reach out, be like, hey, this person, like, you know, is receiving any kind of service or a betterment or any better thing in life. I think they shouldn't because of what they did to you. And I can tell you from being a victim on certain things myself, I wouldn't want to hear anything about my abuser in any capacity. Like, they can go live their life. And if they end up being a millionaire who saves a million orphans and, you know, does X, Y, and Z, I kind of just don't care. Like, I don't want them to have, I wish them nothing is what it is. Like, I know they always say, like, what is from the musical Rent, but like, the worst, the opposite of love isn't, like, the opposite of, like, hate isn't love or something like that. It's indifference, like, or something like that. And I feel very indifferent towards my abuser because I just don't wish them anything. I don't wish them non-existence. I just don't wish them anything. So, like, if people are like, hey, like, I'm trying to do this for you, it's like, I don't want that. That's not what justice and forgiveness looks like to me. Like, it's very personal, at least in my journey. Like, since we're on this conversation, it's very personal to me. So I don't want to be involved. I don't want it to be brought up and I don't want it to be blasted on the internet. I want to be able to move on from it. And if I'm seeing them, like, on a new TV show or something like that, then I'm going to still have the same reaction where it's incredibly indifferent to all the hurt that I've been caused because I've healed from it enough to where it still just remains indifferent. I don't wish them anything.
Well, I think that's a really good point because, like, I'm also, you know, as a survivor of sexual assault and intimate partner violence, I think I too have, like, and this isn't, everyone is at a different place in their life, right? And I think, so I don't want to diminish, you know, other people, like, where they are, but I also, like, as someone who has done the real work, the painful work to, like, heal from, or, like, at least get to a place where I feel healthier about the situation. Somebody recently brought up an ex of mine, the person who did some really horrible things, and I was like, all I could say was, okay. Like, I was like, they were like, oh, this person did, you know, they're doing this and they have a new partner and, like, you know, they're really, you know, it seems like they're doing well, but, like, I don't know because they did all this stuff to you and, but, like, this and that. And I'm like, okay. Like, I was like, sometimes I think, and I know this isn't the case, and I do think that, like, when people talk about it and bring it up, it probably does come from a well-meaning, like a good place most of the time. But I also always wonder, I'm like, are you just here for the drama, girl? Because I don't really want to talk about this. And also, like, it's one of those things I'm like, I don't care. It's the same thing. Yep. As Will and Bella said, you know, I didn't react because I didn't care. And indifference is worse than hate. So, like, I very much, like, I'm like, I'm doing my own thing. I got my own life.
Well, that's the thing, though.
You know, I wish them nothing.
I had the same thing recently, actually. I had, I have a like page on Facebook that I sometimes utilize, and mm-hmm. I was just happened to be on it, and I was looking at some drama that was happening from the place I used to live. There is a person in my story I don't talk about a lot who, I realized it intimate partner violence doesn't quite fit the bill. It's a person who gave me a lot of emotional abuse. I dislike and hate this person. It's funny. It's not even indifference at this point. It still is just much hatred towards this person. And more so than, like, my ex-husband, who is the person I speak a lot about online, there was this person in my life who caused me such harm emotionally. And in their name, I was reading the stuff that was happening in my city, my old city, and his name came up. Because, like, you know, he's not blocked from this page, and I saw his name. And I haven't heard his name or seen his name written down in such a long time. And I thought to myself about how much I would just not want to be around this person ever again if I could help it, because of how awful and evil and terrible they are of a person. And I was thinking, I was like, okay, take this feeling I have right now and apply it to the situations that are happening around you, because this really did just happen yesterday. And I was like, okay, so I don't want to see this person. I want to be around this person. I was like, would I be the person who, and I agree with Carly's point, not to diminish anyone's experiences, I was trying to put myself in people's shoes, about would I, for the things we're going to talk about, would I write like a show producer or a bar to have this person removed from my space? And the thing is, when I thought about it, I actually had tried to do that, not about this person, someone else. When I was in my early 20s, there was a situation. It's funny because it involved this guy. I was friends with we're going to call him a military friend of mine. And the narcissist, who we're going to refer to him as, the narcissist was egging on the military person, bringing up the fact that, like, you know, his kid situation and, like, how he's struggling with his sexual orientation, whatever, whatever. And we're all drinking at a party and he's just egging it on because the narcissist was really terrible, to where the military person, like, grabs him by the throat of my house and like shoves him up against the wall and pretty much says, I'm going to kill you. You know, and then we pull him off of him and whatever. And the military guy then leaves. And then I remember I called the bar the next day that we all work at and said, like, hey, that I was like, the military man tried to like do all this stuff. I was like, I think he's kind of like, wow, you know, and she didn't do anything about it. And it wasn't. And the thing is, now that I'm older and wiser, I'm actually happy that she didn't, because specific incidents that happen between two individuals outside of the bar scene isn't necessarily built for the bar scene. Like, it's not, but it's not her job to be like, okay, well, he's fired because he hurt somebody in the queer community, regardless if the narcissist deserved it or not. She was like, no, I'm not gonna fire this person for something that, one, didn't happen on company property. Two, like, you all were drinking at a house party, like, have some accountability, because she was that girl. and she's like, no, I'm not gonna do anything. And at the time, I was really frustrated by that, because I was like, well, because in my brain, I think I'm fully starting to understand that we treat queer spaces like home and work and everything like all in one, because it's where we feel the most safe. So when something disrupts that, we want to remove the thing from the space because we feel like we're losing our home. It's almost like the mom who, like, you know, steals from the grocery store to pay her bills, you know, because she's so afraid of losing her home, right? And I think that that's what happens in queer spaces. We want to keep them so safe for ourselves. It's almost, and I mean to say this selfishly, people say it's about community, but it is about ourselves when we do it, when we start complaining, because we feel like our safety is being taken away from us. And that was a long spiel just to basically get to this comment of, I recognize what I did in that moment and how I felt about my abuser and that situation. And I do feel a little bit ashamed of myself. Not saying that anybody should feel ashamed of themselves for their actions, but for me, I was, looking later back on it. I was like, I can't believe I tried to do that, where I tried to remove people from the spaces that they probably feel comfortable in. Because this person was struggling with their sexual orientation, and that's why they had been going to our Q+ space to figure out kind of who they were. And I wanted to ban them from that. And I kind of feel guilty about that sometimes.
I think that's a really good point. So one thing I think about all the time is, speaking about community, like, what does community look like? And what does community without conditions look like? And how, like, and this is a nuanced conversation because it is tricky, and I would never say that, like, oh, you should be forced to, like, hang out with your abuser or be in the same space because, you know, oh, they deserve community too. But it's something I think about all the time, is everyone deserves community, right? And like, and so what does that look like? And if you're actively harming people, that's a different conversation than someone who continues to try and keep someone down for something they've done in the past, which is just, and I'm not trying to diminish anybody's experience, but.
Well, you're right. That conditions part, like, without getting into too specific, like, but I do want to get into specifics. That is a good question. And that's going to cause me to think about that a lot. Because the thing is, there should be hidden rules about community, especially queer community. There should be hidden rules that we try to treat each other well, and we should try to keep each other safe. I feel like those are hidden rules I think most people understand. But what that safety looks like is probably going to be different for a lot of people. I remember an incident. Carly was there for this. She might have been there for this. There was we had an event, one of the first Sweetheart events I attended, that there was a fight that kind of broke out outside of the bar between like three different individuals. Yeah. And a patron made a comment about the fight, and the patron yelled back at the patron about like intimate partner violence that they knew about in their past. So like, oh my God, you know, keep your mouth shut because, you know, you beat up your boyfriend and da 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 da, and like just unloaded this, right? And as a way, because obviously, you know, it's a fight at this point, you know, no holds barred of what I'm going to say to you in public, right? And we kind of get that. That's fights and whatever. But I remember distinctly looking at the patron's face when that was just said, and the feeling of like embarrassment, humiliation, like they went like completely white in the face and da 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 da. I never actually said that before, that I looked at their face when that was said. Mm-hmm. And regardless of how right or wrong, or if that was true or not, in that moment, because that's not necessarily what we're talking about, is this person, if that was true, is this person safe in our community? Because this person's been hanging out. I still see them to today, going to bars and da 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 da. But if they really did beat the crap out of their boyfriend, are they not allowed in our community anymore? They're not allowed in queer spaces. They're not allowed to drink with us, party with us, have a good time with us, like, anymore, if they did these things? And the answer sometimes could be yes, I guess, depending on what it was and how it operated. And then it goes back to Carly's original question about, like, well, when does the forgiveness happen? When are they allowed to come back in? When does the teacher asking you to sit out in the hall end, right? When are they allowed back in and accepted? Yeah. And how have you made those decisions for yourself? Like, not necessarily people who, for you, because we can get out of that trauma hole for a second, but, like, people that have hurt friends of yours, right? Like, when have you started, like, allowing them back in?
For me, it's about... when you're, well, first and foremost, when you're no longer actively hurting people, and, like, you have, I mean, that's step one. It's sort of like the, you know, first step is admitting you have a problem kind of situation. Like, when you stop actively hurting people and engaging in the behavior, also, when you take accountability for your actions, in whatever accountability looks like, which, side note, I always struggle a little bit with, like, demands for public accountability.
Same.
Because that, if I sort of, think about, like, what is public accountability doing? And, like, why are you asking for public accountability? Because I also feel like if a survivor of abuse or of a situation, like someone who's directly impacted, is saying, hey, this is what I want from you, that's a different conversation. But we also always call for it from other people who, like, as someone who's, like, not directly involved. And I'm like, that's, you know, why are you asking for public apologies when... I personally, I'm like, I don't want my shit blasted all over social media. I don't want a public apology where Facebook hits me with a, on this day, you know, 2 years from now, and I have to relive it all over again. Public apologies are tricky to me.
You know, and actually, but, you know, here's the thing, though. Actually, right on that point, and I'll let you finish. I once started saying recently that if the offense was public, the accountability needs to be public.
Oh, and that's dope.
Because I recently, and it's actually on, so I can talk about it, because I did talk about it on the podcast, and I put a screenshot of it. Like, I was getting canceled online by a drag entertainer who was going through, actually, I don't know if they're going through a mental health crisis, that's not for me to say, who was posting my name, my full name on the internet about things, about how I did something to them. And I guess to wrap up that story is that they reached out to me, I think about a month ago, in a private message saying, like, apologizing for what they did and how they handled it and how my name was tagged and da 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 da. And that's when I said to, I don't think I said anything back to them, but I was telling my friends, I was like, that was a really public post that everybody saw, got shared a million times. Not like they were sharing the screenshots a million times. I was like, in a private message about how they hurt me doesn't quite fit with my accountability needs from them, because the offense was so damn public. Like, that's so that, but I agree with, in the sense of, like, abuse, sexual assault, and all those other things. Like, even if somebody gets, like, their ass kicked in a bar, I don't need, like, Facebook, like, just like you said, knowing all about my business when they want to apologize. Like, that can be private. But if the offense was super public, I would kind of want the accountability public.
And that I can totally agree with. Like, I'm like, if you drag my name through the mud publicly and then you want to apologize to me privately because you feel bad because you were wrong. No, baby, you better apologize to me publicly because you slammed me publicly. Dude. And for better or worse, as drag entertainers, as entertainers in general, as artists, half of our whole shtick is our name and who we are as people. And because I genuinely believe, and I say this, I also like have the benefit of like drag not being my full-time job, as you do, Coco, although drag is more lucrative for you than it is for me. But my thing is I don't have to support a show. I don't have to support a person. I have the luxury of choosing, if I don't like you as a person because I don't like your morals, I don't like your values, I don't like the things you do, I just don't have to show up to your event. I don't have to support you I don't have to support your artistry. But I still try to support drag. Where was I going with this? I don't remember. But the point is, I agree with you that, like, if you do something publicly, you should apologize for it publicly. Because this happened to me once, not super long ago, in a classic situation of the dolls are fighting, this fellow trans woman came for me publicly and attacked me in a group chat and on social media. And then she apologized to me privately. And then I didn't respond. And then I saw her out and about, and she was like, "Hey, I just wanted to talk to you and tell you I'm sorry." I'm like, "You dragged my name through the mud. You made me look like a monster to a whole bunch of my sisters and non-binary siblings. And then when you were corrected on the situation, because you spoke out of turn, when you were corrected, you said nothing, silence." And I was like, "So I don't really need your private apology. If you want to get onto the social media and make an apology and right the wrong that you created, then by all means, and I will, you know, happily accept that." In this particular situation, I think this is, you know, there's levels to this. I also was like, "But if you don't do that, I'm booked and busy. I know who I am as a person. The people who love me know who I am as a person. So I don't really care that you dragged my name publicly. It didn't impact me that much. But don't apologize privately." So that, I think, is a really good point.
Yeah, and actually, it kind of...
I'm still mad about
the one that happened to me, too. I've moved on from it, but I'm still mad that it happened. And so to get into part of the reason that we're talking about this, so, you know, we have the themes of cancel culture. We talked about accountability here. And we talked about, like, you know, justice for victims and survivors. So now we are going to shift a little bit into talking about the abusers and what that... And actually, alleged abusers too. True abusers and alleged abusers, there is a difference, right? And so I'm going to talk about... So my husband was DJ Queer Club. I saw a message that was sent to a show producer where it was just a cliff note. They were like trying to cancel somebody else from this show. And then there was a sub note underneath it that basically said, be like, "Oh, and I've heard DJ Queer Club also has allegations of abuse." And... which just seeing red is the biggest understatement of the universe with that comment. I was pissed, livid, floored, and upset in every which way about the thing. I actually wrote the person on Instagram yesterday in a very kind message to ask them, like, "Where did this come from and what did you hear?" They have not responded yet as of the time of recording this. And I think to myself, so, because this is truly the definition of a fake allegation. I'm with my husband 100% of the time, almost, except when he's at work, and I'm pretty sure he's not beating people there, or else he'd get his job, like, get fired. So unless he is sneaking off in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. to go beat some bitch's ass, like, I don't really know what's happening here. So and I'm with him all the time. So, and like, everybody really came out in support of him, which is beautiful, and I want to acknowledge that. But when we have a case of, let's say that this show producer decided to, because they are the DJ of one of these shows, the show producer decided to remove my husband from the show, and he does depend on his DJ work to, like, buy and have the lifestyle he wants to have. And if he started losing gigs because of it, like, he can't even fight back, because the person never said where the allegations came from. Like, it all it is just now a rumor that DJ Queer Cub has allegations of abuse. There's nothing else. There's nothing else. And we would all like to believe, and it drives me crazy when people say this, well, you know, people will know that that's probably not true and it should be fine. I was like, yeah, but probably and should isn't a guarantee. Like when he's up next year for hopefully getting to DJ Pride main stage or Pride side stage again, like, and they're like, well, you had some allegations of abuse, we heard, and so we're not going to offer you that really amazing, beautiful opportunity. That's when it starts affecting it. Because there are some gigs where they're like, we don't want any negative drama or press. And so, like, they might, like, not look at this person for that. And it sucks because, you know, it's not true. But how do we prove that it's not true? How do we exist in community? Or how do you clear a name when you can't even talk to... Well, one accuser, not even the person who said they were the victim, but an accuser about it. Like, where do you go from here? That's what I'm struggling with for the fake allegations.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I have some thoughts on this. First off, with this situation specifically, I will just say, and I know it's not about like, you know, Coco, you and I have talked about this, and you know, I made a comment on your post, but like the thing that irked me about this is Adam is like the sweetest human being in the world. Like Coco's an absolute monster, yeah. But DJ Queer Cup is the sweetest, kindest human being I've ever met in my life. And so that's struggle. And I think it is a question because I also struggle with that mentality of like, oh, the people who know them will know their heart. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. But like, also, what about the producers? What about the event promoters and the event bookers? Is that a thing? Who maybe don't know them as well. And like, I also am like, I'm going to say something controversial. Mm-hmm. And Coco can edit it out if they want. I genuinely love this mentality of like believe survivors. I'm all about that because absolutely. But does that extend to people who make accusations and accuse people of things who aren't survivors? Because my guess is, and I don't know the situation. Well, in this particular situation, I'm going off of like, I believe that like DJ Queer Cup didn't actually like it. Those allegations are false 100%, but 112%, I would say. But this person, it sounds like, wasn't the actual, like, wasn't even involved in whatever these allegations exactly are. And so how does the same logic, you know, transfer to people who aren't involved, who just throw out words? We all know words fucking hurt people. And I'm just like, we need to be more careful about a cliff note comment that can ruin someone's career. And also, it would be different, and again, this situation, but it would be different if this person said, oh, this, you know, they have all these they have an allegation, and then was like, and this is what it is. Yes. Like, but like, if you're not even going to respond to a message of like, hey, what did you hear? Like, what is this thing? Like, this happened to me recently. Someone came up to me and was like, oh, the girls are talking about you. And I said, who? And then they wouldn't name drop. And I was like, you're causing drama at this point. Like, this is drama. And then and I'm not going to name names, but Coco, I think I talked to you about this, so maybe you know. But I was like, who? And finally they told me. And I was like, who? And they go, oh my God, that's so funny. And I'm like, girl, you are just trying to create drama. I was like, also, I really don't know who this person is. I'm not trying to be shady. When I say who this person is, I was like, I'm not being shady. I've just never heard of them. Like, I live in a bubble. But yeah, it's something I think about. What does that look like? And also, how do you move forward when you don't even know
people say, well, and on that note, like, because this is a really good point, too. Like, and we're going to keep saying with a fake abuser, right? Or, sorry, a false allegation abuser. And, like, so if the person saying it, and I agree with your point, and I think a simplistic way of saying that for me would be, because I think I'm agreeing with you on that, a simplistic way of saying, like, I believe victims, I do not believe rumors. Like, I will be cautious of rumors, but I will believe victims as much as I can. And the thing is, so this person obviously was sharing stories, but I also tend to believe people are like, this thing happened to my best friend. Like, if you could even say, like, even if, like, this happened to a close friend of mine, or this happened to a friend of mine, and it's their story, not, oh yeah, my friend relayed a story to me about something they heard. That is then the definition of a rumor. And we can't hurt people for those. That sucks to hurt and ruin someone's career for those things. Now, if there's an air of truth to it, then it's the responsibility as much as they can of the closest friend or like the victim to say something. And I know this gets into that conversation, especially in Portland. We talk about, actually, let's keep it back on the fake allegations front. We tend to protect victims so much here in a way that I find to be beautiful. And also, we protect victims so much here that we can't actually know if the story is true. Because what's happening, like with my husband here, like if I reach, what if the person said, oh, well, I don't want to, break their confidence. But it did, even if they said it did happen to a close friend of mine that they said that your husband abused them. I don't want to break their confidentiality. I'd be like, but that's never happened. Like, could you tell me who it is? And they're like, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. But your husband is an abuser. I do believe my friend. It's like, okay, then you have nothing at that point. And I think that was part of the reason I wanted to have today's podcast is because of that point. It's like, well, I don't know who the victim is. Can I, if I could talk to them or figure it out, or if it was like they felt offended because they got flipped off. And the one thing about the situation for my husband that I think is true is I do talk about online about somebody abusing me. And I say my ex a lot. This person only met me and Adam once, who's saying all of this stuff. And I just have a feeling that they think Adam is that person. That's what I think is happening. I think Adam is the ex I'm talking about. But you know, that's speculation. I have nothing to go on for that. Like, it could be a situation where Adam was like carrying DJ equipment and bumped into somebody, they fell down and Adam didn't like offer them a hand. That's a possibility, right? You know, like, but you're not giving it to me. They're like, well, the victim doesn't want to be named because they don't want any like person to bully them. Be like, but that you're still going around and then tarnishing the reputation of my husband. So there has to be a give and take somewhere.
Yeah. And also, I don't know. So everyone knows I'm like a bleeding heart liberal, but sometimes I have like more moderate views, and I believe in like I believe in the justice system, not always, but because it disproportionately targets people. But like, also, like, you have a right to like face the people who are making accusations about you. And if you're not willing to like, this might be a little controversial, and it's nuanced, but if you don't give people the ability to defend themselves when an accusation is made, especially in this situation where it feels like categorically not true, then what are we doing?
I know, like, people shouldn't have to face their abusers. Like, I don't necessarily, if somebody put me in a room with my abuser, I would absolutely face them because I feel like I have things I need to say. But that's because I've grown and I've healed from it. I know people, like Carly said earlier, being mindful, some people are not on that path yet to be able to do that.
And to clarify, yeah, I don't think people should be forced to face their abuser, but, period, hard stop. I also believe that people who are accused deserve, quote unquote, their day in court. Yeah. And like, if it's very clear, I'm like, oh, this person is a monster, and people come out and there's multiple reports as there was at a certain place. We all know. Then that's one thing. But if you're gonna, especially if it's like a friend of a friend kind of situation, which clarify maybe Coco, but like my understanding was that's sort of what this particular situation was. It was just like, oh, DJ Queer Cup also has allegations. Yeah. Didn't even say, oh, I heard it from a friend. My friend was the person, or I was the person. It was just a blanket. This person has allegations. And it could be the person who said it. It could be their second cousin's hairdresser's, like, babysitter. I don't, like,
it's true. It's very true. I mean, I'm not trying. That's what it said. It said this person also... it said this person also has allegations of abuse. Actually, I'll just read it for the podcast because I don't mind sharing it because I know it's so horribly untrue. I said to the message that was said. Oh my gosh, it went to so many places. Oh, here it is. It literally said DJ Queer Club, not even Cub. DJ Queer Club also has allegations. Sorry. DJ Queer Club also has allegations of abuse as well. That was it.
Well, there you go. Obviously, it's just a case of mistaken identity. DJ Queer Club is the problem.
Oh, my gosh.
It happens from time to time.
Oh, my gosh. That's so fantastic. That's true. And
I'm not trying to diminish, but like also
it's so stupid.
This particular situation is so stupid to me.
So stupid.
Listen, I will call Barbie Valentine, everyone knows her. I will call her right now and we can fight. I'm just saying. I'm just kidding. I don't condone violence, guys.
It's true. I have been feeling, the other thing too is I've been feeling powerless. I know this kind of sounds like a sidestep from the conversation at hand, but I feel powerless too because the rumor mill or like the concept we talk about in corporate America, like perception is reality. And like when those things get out there and if you don't nip them in the bud, and this is not giving validity to like white rapists, like and shit like that, who are like, this is going to ruin his life. It's like, it's going to ruin his life because he did a stupid thing. This, on the other hand, that's completely untrue is like, it's not going to ruin his life, but it's super bad. And it's super, in this community, we send a lot of messages to each other trying to protect our community. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because that's our next topic. I keep hearing from all of these people sending messages to show producers and bars and bar owners. I'm trying to keep the community safe is what I keep hearing. And I'm going to offer my thoughts on that before Carly goes. The reason that bothers me is because your resolution for keeping the community safe is following around a person and talking about what might or might not be true about a moment in their life. And that is bothersome to me. And I know, and we can actually wrap in like a real allegation here too, because say it was real and you're trying to keep the community safe, you following around a person and being like, hey, they sexually assaulted my friend. At every place they go, from the grocery store to a job interview to when they're in line at McDonald's and things like that, isn't actually solving anything. Like, you might be keeping all of these specific situations safe, but I feel like that's the concept of like first that teaching a man to fish versus giving him one. Like, it's one of those things of where like you're not actually solving the problem at hand. And a lot of the people are also saying, and I don't mean to diminish. Oh, here's my controversial one. I've heard a lot of people say, well, the reason we didn't go to the cops is because everybody involved in the story is trans and ACAB all day. There's a lot of validity to that comment. I absolutely agree with a lot of that. I also agree with the thing that you didn't do, which is you didn't go to the cops. What you are doing is just following around a person and writing a lot of messages. You're not keeping the community safe because guess what also happens when a person leaves a drag show? They're no longer at the drag show. You writing a show producer saying, I'm trying to keep the community safe, then what about the community outside of the drag show? What about the community at the Walmart? Because you're not writing Walmart when you send them a Walmart. You're not writing their jobs. You're not like talking to their girlfriends or their partners or things like that or talking to their friends. You're writing show producers. You're just writing. That's the only thing you're doing is writing show producers and bar owners. That's all you're doing. And like keeping them out of that spaces then goes back to that point that I have. It's selfish because what you're doing is I want this space safe for me. I don't, because really, at the same point, you don't really care about the community. You don't, because if you did, you would be doing everything in your power to figure out if, one, a person had actually done it and or changed, and two, if there really was something recent, going to the proper authorities about it. And so you can remove them from our scene, and then there can be justice served. Now, I also have a lot of problems with the justice system as well, just like Carly says, because I do feel like they disproportionately target marginalized communities. And it's currently the only system we have in place, because the system of just contacting bar owners and show producers and show directors, or even people in the cast of a show, doesn't really do anything. You're just, it's like you're wanting to keep people from having an opportunity. You're like, well, I'm just going to keep them from having an opportunity, and I've kept the community safe. Like, if you've ever been in the back room of a drag show, nothing is going to happen in the back room of a drag show. I mean, it can. Don't get me wrong, you can. I'm not diminishing people's experiences that have. But really, nothing is going to happen in the back room of a drag show, because there's not enough time. And when the show is over, everybody leaves. And most of these dressing rooms nowadays have cameras. In the basement of CC's, there's cameras. Like, just, it doesn't make sense to me what the goal or resolution is. All of that was to say, I don't understand what you're hoping to gain by doing that. Because that's not community safety.
Yeah, well, first of all, speaking, when we talk about cancel culture, if you want to cancel a whole bunch of people all at once, put a microphone in the back room at a drag show, because we're all monsters.
See?
Oh, God.
But also, somebody said this to me. They said it as a joke, but I'm going to say something a little controversial. It's something to think about. A friend of mine, we were talking about, like, people writing show producers, and a friend of mine goes, God, if you want the gig, just say that. And I think about that. I genuinely think about that. I'm like, if you say you're trying to keep the community safe, but all you're doing is writing show producers to get someone's gig canceled or to get someone fired or to get someone kicked out, what is your motivation? Are you trying to get the gig? Girl, like, ugh. And also, like, because I do agree, I 110% agree with you that you're not out here, if all you're doing is writing the show producer or writing the venue or writing the owner, whoever, you're not out here trying to make sure that this person is, like, if the actual community is safe, that they're not going to spaces. Other spaces, because you're right. Like, you're not out of the, you're not right in Walmart. I mean, they wouldn't probably care if you did, because they don't even care about their own workers. but yeah, it's something to think about. And my friend said that, and I was like,
ooh. Well, and then here, I'll even play it on the other side of the coin. If somebody wrote me after listening to that last spiel we just had, and they're like, Coco, but this person really did abuse me. I don't feel safe around them. Like I just, like, and I want to do drag, and I don't want to be in shows that they're in. And so I'm writing show producers to let them know what they did to me. So hopefully I can continue being in these spaces and doing drag and feeling safe because they abused me. The thing is, that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. It's always somebody close to the situation. And so I will give validity to this. If you happen to be the person and you don't, I've done that. I was in a show with a person who emotionally abused me. I know it's difficult than physical abuse and sexual assault. Emotionally abused me in a way that really, really messed with my mental health. And somebody put me in a show with this person. Show producers don't know the interpersonal relationships between you and other cast members. That's not their fault when they do that. And to blame them for that is, I will say to everyone, definitively wrong. And it's not up to them to keep up to date on interpersonal relationships. That's also wrong if you think that they should. Point blank, period, into that story. But I got put in a show with somebody I had emotionally abused me really, really hard and publicly canceled me. And I still did the gig anyway, because I wanted to be a person who didn't let that person make me feel uncomfortable. And I didn't really interact much at that show, didn't talk much with the cast, didn't talk much with the bar, had a couple of cocktails, did my performance, and I left, got my money, and I was good. Because nobody's going to keep me from doing drag. And I'm not saying you have to be the person who's strong enough to do that. But in other circumstances, I have been like, after I see the show, I just politely back out. I'm like, oh, I had something come up. so much. Keep me in mind for next time. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I write the show producer privately and I say, oh, hey, I didn't realize that this person was going to be in the show. I don't really mess with them. And, you know, that's on me, like, and whatever. If you want to know what happened between us, that's great. But, like, you know, because it's my accountability. It's like I have to take ownership of that, like, because I'm the one who's being triggered because this person abused me and I have to remove that person. It seems really gaslighting and, like, in a bunch of different ways to just, like, tell a community. Like, I always, what was I saying? I was saying this online recently about the difference between, like, something that's, like, being a bully and something that's, like, a trigger or something that, you know, you're thinking inside about yourself. Like, you have to own your own triggers. You really do. Because what you're doing is, like, hey, show producer, that person's in the wrong, so you have to change everything. Bar, you as well. Bar owner, you as well. Oh, and patrons, also all of you. Like, it's just, that is such a weird thing to me. Like, that is, oh, boundaries. I was talking about boundaries. It's like you're forcing your boundaries, because that's what it is. It's a boundary. I'm letting you know that a boundary of mine is I feel unsafe around this person. So you have to change this. It's like, that's not how boundaries work. That's not at all how it works. You have to remove yourself. And the thing is, and I'm going to talk about it from my own, because I know I've been kind of on a spiel here. I'm going to talk about it from my own perspective. When I called the cops on my ex-husband, do you know what the cops told me? As much as we hate this, they told me I need to remove myself from the situation because they couldn't remove him from the situation because he hadn't done anything. Like, he didn't really, like, there wasn't enough for them to remove him. Like, if I felt unsafe, the cop literally said, if you feel unsafe, then you have to leave because this person's also on the lease. They have every right to be here just as much as you. Like, and they, since they haven't really done anything to you in this moment, we really can't do anything. And so people would say, but Coco, this person did do something to me. Like, yeah, but not at this bar, not in front of this person. They have no grounds to do anything here. Like, and the thing is, I always hated that. And it broke my heart knowing that that's how justice actually works, that I've been hurt and I have to remove myself from being safe or feeling like I can participate in community is messed up. But that's also a reality. Because when I finally did get justice, when my husband actually did do something, then he went to jail. Like, he went to jail because he did something. I called the cops. I was like, okay, now he's done something. They're like, great, we're going to remove him. But when you're telling people, like, that's why it makes it so uncomfortable. And I know for all the people out there who hate the fact that I've said all of that, you just have to remember what you're seeking from your justice, what you're seeking from justice and what you're wanting by calling show producers and calling bars and calling venues. It is for you. You're doing it for yourself. But if you really want something to happen, then maybe you should contact the authorities or work yourself, work a program, work on your mental health to where you can get to the level to where maybe you can someday. And I'm saying that some people maybe don't ever seem to get there and they should be able to feel just as comfortable in that space. I get it. But sometimes it's not a reality. My boundaries and my triggers are mine. And if I'm not able to be around a person, then I have to remove myself.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
It does. But I agree with you. And I think that, like, you know, something, because I do think that we have to take more ownership over our own lives and, like, the healing process and how we handle situations, because it does suck, because that was a really hard lesson for me to learn of, like, well, I'm hurt, so, like, you should do something. And I'm like, but the more I grow, the more I learn, it's like, well, no, it is sort of up to me to, like, take some ownership, but action. Like, I also feel like when I take action by, like, removing myself from a situation or all of this, like, I'm taking the power away from that person in a way, because I'm like, I'm going to remove myself because I don't feel safe, and that's all I can do. And I said this in a, like, to a friend once, and I genuinely believe this, and I know not everybody sees this, but I was like, sometimes walking away is the only thing that you can do, and there is power in that.
There's so much power in that.
Like, it feels like, especially, like, so something I had to learn from my own intimate partner violence and my own, like, thing, and, like, unfortunately, I had to, like, realize this while I was in the hospital, like, because this person put me there. Like, walking away doesn't make me powerless. It makes me powerful. And I think about that all the time now. I'm like, I'll just remove myself from the situation because there's power in that.
And no, anyways. I agree with that. I agree with that fully, because there is a lot of power in that. Because I'm thinking about, because in the other line of, if this person really is an abuser, it's saying, well, I don't want them to do it to anybody else. Then still, not to hurt anyone's feelings, your action of calling a show producer, a bar, or a venue still doesn't keep that from happening. Because if they really are an abuser in our scene who's, like, let's say sexual assault, they're sexually assaulting people and they're finding their victims at drag shows, if you ban them from queer spaces, they're still going to find victims outside. Like, and that's the reality. And I do think I did talk about the full story at Stag on this podcast. And if people go back and listen to that episode about that, that was one thing that I also did feel towards the end of Stag as well, that this abuser, this rapist, like, they're like, well, we're trying to ban this person from the space. There's validity in that, because this person was actively doing this thing to people in the space and outside of the space. But we wanted to remove this person from a queer space because, one, they weren't even really queer, on top of the fact that they were using it to find victims. But the other thing too is, it's the same thing applied here. If we remove them from that space, that doesn't keep it from happening to other people outside of the space when it was happening to other people outside of the space. So I know that this is hard, but the authorities, our justice system as it is today, that's the only thing, that's our only recourse, really, because we need to remove this person. This is the scenario. This is just specifically the scenario of people who are actively trying to abuse. We might have taken away a venue from them, maybe might even have taken their car keys, right? You know, like, but that's not going to stop it from happening if this person really is that person. Yeah. Like, we have to find better ways and actually build up as a community. And that's why the private messages, I think, don't make any sense. If you actively know that this person is sexually assaulting folks, I agree with Carly's very first comment on here. Like, cancel them online, publicly, being like, this thing happened to my best friend with this person, or this thing happened to me. This is the details of it. I'm leaving the victim's name out of it, but this is what happened. And we need to remove this peer person from our scene because they are a danger to the community. Like, and that's what I think should happen in those scenarios. And also, the controversial point. If the allegations came to light, true or false, that somebody was sexually assaulting people and they have grown from that, they've healed and they're working towards their forgiveness, they've gone through mental health, they've been to jail and things like that. I have to believe, especially because Black people are still incarcerated at a disproportionate rate, I have to believe that when people come out of prison or come out of jail, that they have the opportunity to become, like, to heal and become a different person if they so choose. And if they choose to do that and be a better person where they never offend again, or they never even break the law again in any capacity, then do we still have to remember them from their worst moment? And I have to believe that because there's so many of the people that look like me in prison. I have to believe that because if I make a mistake and end up in prison, I don't want that to be following me around for the rest of my life. And I know that that seems unfair of me to say, especially if it's something as serious as rape. That person will eventually, both parties eventually have to heal from that moment in whatever capacity happens. And if they never rape or offend again, that is a good thing. That is a good thing. And we should hope for that. We should hope for that as much as possible. Because the otherwise is, like, the other thing at the end of the story is, it almost seems like when we get on these tangents of cancellation when it comes to these difficult subjects, it just seems like at the end of the day, you just really want these people to unalive themselves. Like, that seems like the only way you'll be satiated.
I think about that sometimes. I'm like, what is your end goal with your relentless attacks? Not attacks, but your relentless efforts to, they are kind of attacks. Like, I'm going to call it what it is. It, sometimes it does feel like an attack. But what is, like, what is your goal with these relentless efforts to cancel someone, to remove them? Is the goal for them to unalive themselves? Because they're still a human being. And even for me, I thought about that. So I went through this a couple years ago where I had some really, really shitty thoughts about, and I can call them shitty thoughts. I had some really shitty thoughts about someone who did this really horrible thing. And I was like, you are a monster. You are genuinely, and I know I throw that word around as a joke, but this human being is a genuine monster. And then I was like, oh, I wish they didn't exist anymore. And I was like, well, what does that look like? And I'm like, basically, I'm hoping that someone dies. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ooh, that's really gross. Because as horrible of a person as they are, and as difficult of a reality this was for me to accept, they're still a human being. And like, selfishly, I'm like, do I want it on my conscience that I had, that I hoped for someone to end their life, and then they do? Do I want that on my conscience? And I don't know if that makes sense, but I just, it's something I think about.
I had the moment actually, in the way that you're talking about, and it was years apart, but I had a bully in high school who every time I was around her, she was miserable. And I don't think I've ever actively said, probably super thought at the time, that I wish that that person didn't exist. Because she was so mean to me. Oh my God, she made high school hell. Oh, she was so awful. And the funny thing is, I didn't see her often, but when I saw her, she could make my whole month just turn into garbage. And high school is not that long of a time period. I remember what happened was, yeah, I was at a party well after I graduated high school, a couple of years. I was at a party and we were all just kind of like talking to people we knew from high school. And like, we were just like kind of joking about whether or not we liked them or not and like things like that. And we were just like kind of like having this conversation. And basically what happened was, I was like, oh yeah, this girl, that girl, da 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 da. And everybody was, because I couldn't remember her name. And basically what happened was, somebody was like, this person? I said, yeah. I was like, she was the worst. She made my high school experience hell in all of the worst ways. And somebody was like, she completed suicide like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And they're like, wow, that's really like messed up of you. And I remember, like, you know, because we were at a party, like, trying to, like, you know, clear the air about it. And I was just like, oh, I was like, well, I didn't know that you'd gone through anything. They're like, wow, yeah, that's like really messed up. And I remember I was talking to my friends about it later because she was such a miserable person and I was very young. I was like, that's not my problem that she did that. Like, as awful as it was, because I just felt embarrassed because everybody was yelling at me, right? But as I grew as an adult and really, like, reflected on that moment, like, I don't think I really ever have wished anyone to unalive themselves or to not exist.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt bad that I was made to feel bad, right? I was mad that I was made to feel bad about that incident. The thing is, it just kind of made me think later in life, and not to make it sound selfish, even though it will, that maybe she was so awful to me because she was dealing with so much, right? You know, maybe she was just taking out all of her negativity on me in some capacity. You know, so that could have been what happened. And I recognize that, you know, I also, basically, it's all of that's just to say I agree. I agree that I don't think I would ever wish that on someone. I don't ever want somebody to unalive themselves, even if they've hurt me deeply. Even that person I talked about in the beginning of this episode. The person I still actively hate, I don't wish that they didn't exist. I don't wish them to unalive themselves. I may hate them, but I don't wish that on them. And I don't want that on my conscience either.
I may wish that they didn't exist in my realm of existence. Yeah. Like, I may wish that, like, I didn't know them. and they didn't impact me, but I would never wish that somebody like leave this world because, you know, because I also believe that. I know this may be controversial and I'm not diminishing anybody who's like, nope. But also, I genuinely believe that every person, given the right tools, can be better than the worst thing they've ever done. Ooh. And I just, so I, that's something that is a core belief of mine and has been tested, that that belief of mine has been tested in situations. And it's just something that I hold dear to me. Yeah.
I think I agree with that. I fully agree with that. And because now I am a person who says that person is not going to change. And what I mean by that is this person in this, and I really should clarify when I say that to people, I realize this now talking to you. What I really do mean is like, this person is not going to change how they treat you. Like, is what I mean. It's like, this person isn't going to change. They have, and I always say, I do say this, because they have no reason to. Like, they haven't hit rock bottom. They haven't been through a traumatic event. They're not seeing that they've done anything wrong. They're not going to change. Because people only change when they want to better themselves, naturally grow, or recognize that something has gone wrong because of a traumatic incident, or they just recognize it themselves. I say that about people who are alcoholics as well. I was like, people get sober not because somebody told them to. They get so truly they get sober because they have had to make this decision internally that they're going to do that themselves. They might have said, "Oh yeah, my family made me feel a certain way," but then they have to do that journey themselves. Nobody is going to change because nobody can change unless it's you wanting it to happen.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh goodness, this is a heavy conversation. We are getting to the end of our episode, kind of.
So just to, I want to bring it back up just a little bit, which seems kind of unfair for how heavy it got. The thing is, I know we've been talking a lot where it seems like Carly and I probably seem like abuser sympathizers, but I also believe that there is just like a full story to situations. Not saying I don't believe victims, not saying that we should allow abusers into every single space possible. I'm not saying that people shouldn't have consequences. I'm not saying any of that. What I'm trying to say is there's a fuller story, appropriate consequences when necessary, and healing on both sides when appropriate and when necessary is kind of what I was getting at. But now I want to talk about Carly hitting people. So listen, I end the episode every single the same way.
Let's talk about it.
At the end of every episode, when I interview somebody, I say, if you got into a bar fight in the drag scene, what are the three drag artists you would want on your team to help you win the fight and why?
Ooh, on my side. I would say my best friend in the world, Barbie Valentine, because the bitch can throw hands and she's gone to jail for it. So I know she's down to go again. Also, for those who know her, ask her the story. It was actually really good. But she did. Barb is not afraid to throw some hands. And she tells people that all the time, so I don't think she cares that I just said that on a podcast. She just posted
it publicly on my Facebook. And if she did,
yeah. Also, and if she does, oopsie poopsie. Probably, my other good Judy, Coco Jim Holiday, yeah. Because you from the streets, and I know you know some things. I don't think I've ever talked to you about like where you grew up. Maybe you grew up in like middle class suburbia. I don't actually know, but you come across as like you came from the streets, and I appreciate that. And then, God, that's hard. There's so many queens in the city that I feel like I would want on my side. Can I say Autumn Rains? Because there always has to be that one skinny white bitch that like can like I can like pick up and throw in the heat of battle.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. No, I appreciate that. It's funny, actually, nobody's ever chosen Autumn before. That's really interesting.
Well, I just feel like she'd be good to like, she's lightweight enough that I could grab her by the ankles and like swing her around. and thrower, and then she'd like haymaker somebody.
Oh, that's great. Normally people,
not that I've thought about
it, normally people, most everybody in this city, I say 90% of interviews have said Shaniqua Vault.
Oh, yeah, Shaniqua is a great pick because, it's no secret that she's fucking packing. So like, I love Shaniqua. And I'm always afraid that she's going to hear me say something and then like be like, and then I'm going to be a victim. But, I fucking love Shaniqua and she is such a down ass bitch. Like she's the realest, but she's also super, she's super kind yeah. too. But she keeps it real, and I do appreciate that. That's a good. Can I change my answer? Fuck Autumn.
No, we're gonna leave it as Autumn. I think that's super fun because Shaniqua, because she braids my hair. She always asks me. She's like, on your podcast, did anybody else choose me? I'm like, Shaniqua, they always choose you. They always choose you. And she's like, why does everybody think I'm so dangerous? And I always say, I was like, bitch, you carry. Like,
there's yeah,
that's.
And it's not a like, secret. You're
Anna Alexis. Let's like, be real.
We all know.
People just don't want to fuck with that. So tell the kids your socials.
My socials are, you can find me on Instagram at the Carly J Phoenix, and it's Carly with two E's. Don't be spelling it weird. I always say that, but like I actually technically spell it weird because like Carly with two E's is a weird spelling. Yeah, my Instagram is the Carly J Phoenix. I'm not going to shout out my Twitter, but if you follow me on Instagram, it is in the link in bio. Yeah. And then it's just like Carly Evan Roberts on Facebook. And be my friend on Facebook because I'm a sad panda and I love friendship.
Aww, that's great. Well, thank you so much for Carly. Jeez. Thank you so much, Carly, for being on my podcast. Remember, folks, you can follow us at agendaofasecretpodcast.com. I will have all of Carly's socials listed there. Maybe not her dirty Twitter, but we'll see if I can find it. And then come support us out in the community. Hopefully you did take a lot of what we said, and hopefully you listened to the whole thing instead of cherry-picked the things that you wanted to hear and things you hated. I think it was a good conversation. It's a hard one. But, you know, these conversations are difficult, and I'm hoping you enjoyed our perspective and maybe you learned something. Say bye to the kids, Carly.
Goodbye, kids.
Goodbye, kids.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.